become an accountant. Okay, I'm saying that because I want to be an accountant. I know some people here are accountants, but you cannot go into, for sure, yeah, you cannot, some people who have accountants have a sense of humor, but you can't, if you were the type, you could sit in a room with books and just accounting books and computer logs and do that all day, you do not need a sense of humor. You don't need a sense of humor. But it could be you have a sense of humor, but you cannot be mechanic without a sense of humor. You must have a sense of humor. That's all. You cannot be mechanic if you don't have a sense of humor. So if you have a sense of humor...
It's 100% across the board?
It's 100%. The Rosh Hashiva told me, I'm going off script, the Rosh Hashiva told me that when the yeshiva hired Rabbi Goldenberg, Zichrono Livracha, Zichrono Livracha, so people weren't sure about him because he looked more the quiet type, Rabbi Goldenberg. So the Rosh Hashiva, I know that Usher is here. It's okay, but I'm gonna say the story. So I'm trying to remember why the Rosh Hashiva told me this story. Could be I was already in Miami and I came back to New York and I was driving the Rosh Hashiva somewhere because he said this to me in the car. He said many people, some Golem Mechanichim weren't sure he could be a good Mechanich, and I disagreed, and the Baruch Shem, they listened to me in Miami, and I knew he could be a good Mechanich. Why? Because I had dealings with him, and I knew he was a Heverman. Heverman means he's... You know, he knows how to be a clown, and he knew how to make jokes. So if someone has a sense of humor, then you do need that. So okay, so let's go on. A very very important yisod. You think about it. Someone made this ha'ara yesterday that the godless of the relationship that a parent has, those parents will have the schus to be a parent one day. So as a parent, then you could know, the reason why it's brought down, why Hashem created parents, is because it just created people. They're not really parents, just people getting born. You know, you didn't have to be through a parent situation. It could be like you touched a rock and you were formed. You have to be through a parent.
To be born to touch around.
Yeah, no, whatever.
It's fun.
Yeah, it could be spontaneous. Yeah, spontaneous combustion. But it was bedavka done through this method, so that a person, Bez Hashem, becomes a parent, has an easy way to understand how a Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at us. And they give a mashal that if someone does something kind to your kids, now there are no parents in the room. But if someone does something kind to your children, so that's like even better than anything did to you. By the way, this is a kind to our children. I was trying to think when I heard this word. I said, you know, his mama's true. I went to a wedding a couple of weeks ago. I went to a wedding, and the reason I went to the wedding is because somebody was making a wedding, a distant cousin, and I went because this distant cousin took one of my kids' resumes that they were trying to send in to get a job, and they put it on top of the list, and they got the job. It's like I flew into New York for that. I was thinking, wow, why did I flew into New York? Like, would you think that's the biggest? Every time I thank them, I've called them many times to thank them again. I remember that time that you, they view it like nothing. I didn't do anything, but like I'm still like thanking them. I'm flying in to, you know, participate at their chasana, and that's the vart. HaKadosh Baruch Hu views it like if we're nice to any of his children, that the Rebbe Baruch Shalom is flying in for your chasanas. Rebbe Baruch Shalom is going to help you. So that's why another reason to help people and to Marbitz Torah and to just be involved with chesed is because you're helping Hashem's children. And how does Hashem view it? He's going to fly in for your chasana. I was thinking about this. You know, a person has to come up with a mahalach, how he's treating, if a person's going to this is a chinuch vade after all, so we I know no one's going into chinuch tomorrow, but you know, me'ein chinuch, there's me'ein chinuch, you know, people, this is soon going to be summer, people have quasi chinuch jobs, counselor jobs, and other such positions, and you have to, it's hard to think, as you get older, it's hard to think about how you were when you were 12 years old, 13 years old. You think you remember, but it's harder than you think. It's not easy to remember. So I have a few things that, you know, if our teachers would simply, teachers, Rebbeim, when I say teachers, I don't mean only secular teachers, Rebbeim most of them, keep it simple, teachers, that if they would say, you know, I don't want you to have to work hard, because when I was a kid, I didn't want to work hard, and they would come to class every day, we're just going to tell stories. Everyone go around and tell stories. A guy comes in the first day, like fifth grade class, you know, I remember how it was like, I hated school, it was so hard, homework and tests, want to be stressed. You know what we're going to do every day? We're just going to tell like stories. And when people come in, just tell me stories. It's an awesome year. We're just going to have fun. So when you go home that night, you're going to be thinking like, this is be the worst year of your life. You know, what a waste. That's not what kids are looking for. You know, that's a very big, big mistake. People think that kids want there to be no homework and no accountability and no responsibility. That's not what they want. They want to be able to feel accomplished. And they'll do anything they can to stop you from doing your job and to have a good time and not be held accountable. And if they're successful, they're going to say your class is a joke. And if they're not successful, they're going to say, wow, I learned so much by that teacher, by that Rebbe. And it's what they do is not necessarily what they feel. They're acting as kids act. So what we're trying to accomplish, like I was thinking about certain lines. I'm not so smart. I learned it myself. I learned this from wise people. Wise people taught me this. Let's say you want to give. Let's just use Inyana Dioma. Many people here went through our high schools. So okay, there's a final coming up, guys. I know that the principal said the final should be on at least 5 blot, but you know what? I'm just going to do it on 5 lines of Gemara, no Rashi, and you don't even have to know the Taich. As long as you know what Masechta it was, you can get an A. That's not what the kids are looking for. Give it on 5 blot, and give it on, you know, all the, you know, Tosasim. You know, you can't all the Tosasim. Give it 15 tosim. This bechina is going to cover 15 tosim, and it's 5 blot. That's quite a this. You tell them this is not easy, but then you add to it. We're going to have set times for review, and I'm going to help you. And at the and you tell them what they're doing. Like when we fundraise, we don't tell someone, can you give us $5 million? We don't talk about the money. We show them the beautiful gymnasium, or this beautiful Beis Medrash. Someone told me it's going to be the nicest Beis Medrash in the country. Okay, until someone builds a nicer one. So, okay. So you tell, you go to someone and you say, listen, we need a Beis Medrash. Our guys need a Beis Medrash. They deserve a Beis Medrash. You want to be part of this Beis Medrash? Show them this beautiful rendering of Beis Medrash. How much will it cost? I have no idea. We'll find out later how much it costs. And he's not talking about this beautiful Beis Medrash and how the guys are cramped and the guys trip on all the things, everyone coming and trip on all these steps. There are more steps than that Beis Medrash, that upstairs, downstairs, you know, sideways. You didn't know where you were going. Get this farm up the stairs, down the stairs. I remember Dr. Elliot Hahn, you know, the Shulchan Aruch, came in and flopped coming in over those steps by Rabbi Lieberman's office. That's where we put those banisters in. So many people almost killed themselves in that Beis Medrash. So they finally poured the concrete that we still smell. So Revivalson also fell. So you know, we finally, you know, you tell people it's going to be a beautiful Beis Medrash and it's going to be safe. And that's what you do. You show them the promised land. You tell someone, when you do these five lot, if you're able to do this five lot, you know what that is? That's tantamount to Chaim Kanievsky making a siyum on Yerushalmi. If a kid does 15 blot, five lot with 15 tosim, that's the equivalent of what Chaim is doing. They have to tell them, show them, this is the, and I'm going to help you reach that. I couldn't have done it when you're way ahead. I couldn't have done it when I was your age. But I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you accomplish that. And we're starting early enough, and when we finish, you're going to accomplish, and you show them. How do you teach a kid how to ride a bike? And anyone who knows, you just, okay, try again, it falls down. Try again, it falls down. Try again, it falls down. What you do is just do this distance. Wow, you did it. Okay, go back. Now we're going to do this distance. Okay, just do this distance. Just a drop more. Okay, now you can do this distance. Okay? And you just keep going a drop more. So that's how you do it. You show them how we're going to take each step. But at the end, you will have accomplished so much. And you show them you could not have done this. You're supposed to show them, like, you couldn't have done this. You give them an exercise to do that they cannot do, and say, you see what you can do? I'm going to show you at the end of the year or the end of the Zman, you're going to be able to do that. That's a very rewarding feeling. So I learned that, you know, that Vart, it's hard, but I'm going to help you. As opposed to, I've heard teachers, you know, first the Zman is, okay, I hope you guys are ready for a tough year. You know, this will be a rough year. You guys, I know what you're doing till now, but you just better be on your best. Buckle up, right? Because this is going to be a rough year. Okay? And then everybody walks out with a pit in their stomach, and who's assassinating him? Like, that's not what anyone wants to hear. But when a person, you don't show them the tests. You show them what they're going to be able to accomplish at the end. You're doing a fundraising. You know, you're selling them the image of that beautiful base manager, that beautiful gym. I just want you the gym. What it costs, I don't know. We'll get to the cost later. What we have to do to get there? We're going to do this. You're going to be able to read a blot of Gemara by yourself, Gemara Rashosis, and I'm going to teach you. And I'm going to require it. It's going to be hard, but you're going to be able to do it. I will help you. I will be there. If necessary, I'll come to your house. If necessary, you come to my house. If you call me 11 o'clock at night, I will help you. And then they feel like, wow, you're not abandoning me, but deep down, they want to be able to accomplish that. They all want to accomplish that. What I do is, I at the beginning of the year, I give out these surveys. First day of the year, everyone's in a, you know, quasi-good mood. Nobody wants to share anything. And I ask them to write down, like, what are your goals? And they write down their goals, but I save them. At the end of the year, you know, give it out, you know, and see. Okay, everybody write down next to these five questions. Everybody write down, did you accomplish, did you not accomplish, what your goals were?
The people who didn't accomplish.
Okay, let them see. They didn't accomplish. I know. I look at them from time to time, and I talk to them, so I try and steer them. I don't tell them I'm looking at the things, but, you know, they should say, okay, you know, what would you have needed to accomplish? I told the guys in my shir that I promised them that there will be 100 times, they're going to be able to learn 100 times, at least 100 times better. If they'll learn and let me work with them, they'll be at least 100 times better in learning than they are right now. At least 100 times.
The first day of yeshiva, I had a yeshiva, was very excited.
Someone said that?
No, he was very excited to me. He was like shocked.
A hundred times. The reason why I said it is because I think it'll be 1,000 times.
Zero times.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, but I think it'd be much more. You know, because you know how much we gain from every time you go up another level of thinking, of reading. These guys that never practices. I know. Also, they're more mature in 12th grade. They're able to take things a little bit more seriously. So it's pasha to me. It's pasha. When they hear something like that, they were so, like, they already felt like they were already better. They were already, like, 50 times better already. Just from hearing that, they were, like, they were ready to go. So you give them that belief. Okay, next. There was once a scandal, JetBlue, and there was some flight from Boston that was delayed. I don't know if it was because the pilot wasn't there or some engine trouble. And they had rolled off the still on the tarmac, but they were, they had already left the gate. And once they leave the gate, so then you're on the road, and everyone has to stay seatbelted, and like it's like dangerous. And you stand up. We're on an open runway. Open runway. They get a little, like if you stand up, they're like,
yeah, we're
oh my gosh, it's like, yeah, it's like terrible. So, anyway, but because of that, they didn't let anyone off. There was nowhere to go. You couldn't leave. So they ended up being there like 5 hours. And it became a news a story over the news that JetBlue, they have 5 hours in Boston. And it was a scandal. People like were so angry, and lawyers and class action suits, they're going to sue them. And the CEO of JetBlue did something so wise. It took them about, I don't know, 6-7 days to put this together. But they prepared and they sent out to everyone, B'chol Asa V'Aser, the JetBlue Bill of Rights for passengers, a Bill of Rights. I think they came with 10 Bill of Rights. That you have a right. Anyone on a JetBlue flight where the TV's not working, they send you $15. That was from that day. They came up with these are the things that you can expect. And if two hours are going to pass, then it's vaday something. This happens. Like they vaday not going to stay on the ground. They vaday go back to the gate. They made new policies based on that happened because there were no policies. The pilots didn't know what to do, and they couldn't do it. So when you create a Bill of Rights, you tell them, yeah, I'm tough, I'm really tough, but here's what you get out of the relationship with me. And you give them their Bill of Rights. These are your rights, okay? And I do some things. I tell them, I will never let you out late for recess. You will always get 30 minutes for recess. Always. If I don't end late, I end on time or early. But if I do ever end late, you will never lose a second of your recess. Not a second. You know how that when it's time for break, you are watching that clock as a kid. You're probably still doing it.
I had a Rebbe that said that I always end on the bell, always end on time. And it was great. Until he would be like mid-sentence and just stop class.
He stopped by the middle of the sentence?
Yeah. Like, so, and, yep, bell is first. That was it.
What grade was this?
10th grade.
Okay.
Right, he was,
well, I
that was his way of administering a Bill of Rights. Whatever you have to do, let them know in advance what the Bill of Rights are in your classroom. Okay, so that's very, very helpful.
How does this apply with Beis Medrash?
Huh?
How does this apply with Beis Medrash Rabbi?
I think it applies to everyone. Everywhere. So always, the guy should always know what the expectations are. The rules are,
It's much more like laid down, like it's much more chill in the Beis Medrash.
It is.
Hey, you don't have to be structured.
It is. But still, it's helpful. You'd be surprised what the guys have apprehension about. It's a guy doesn't know Shear. Doesn't know what's going on in Shear. So what are the rights? I don't know what's going on. I asked the question and I still don't know. Do I get to come to the Rebbe afterwards? Is there a time where I can ask the question? What happens? There are some things. Somebody asked me today, it could be, what happens if you make a mistake? You deal with a student the wrong way. You said something you weren't supposed to say, or you did something you weren't supposed to do. So I was thinking about this, what to do. Everyone has their way of doing it. I don't know. I found the best thing is to tell them that, you made a mistake. That's what I find. I would want to open that up to other mechanchim and see what they say. But I would tell the guys, I do tell them sometimes. I tell them I'm a failure. I'm a failure as a Rebbe. I do it a little bit as a joke. I'm not joking. I tell them like I'm a failure. I tell them that the Rebbe's job is that the students should learn. So if they're not learning, I tell them, if they were like, fooling around, or I would just say, like, guys, I'm a failure. I can't even get you guys to learn today. Like, I'm so sorry. I didn't prepare properly. Or I would tell them. And then they said, no, Rebbe, it's not you. It's us. I said, no. I say it.
They actually say it's not.
Yeah, well, they always do that. They don't want me to say I'm a failure as a Rebbe. They can't handle that. I don't want to take advantage of them, so I would do it more often. But one time, I remember last year I did it. Shu was not here. Like, I would write him a failure as a Rebbe, which meant that there's no one to cheer. So they said, okay, Rebbe, we're coming. You know, it was like the funny line. But, you know, just, you know, like, when the Reshiva was Nifter, so people were writing in stories, and somebody wrote in the best shmooze he ever heard. Sorry, Luban said, but the best shmooze in Chedusha Lev. I have no idea what that shmooze was. I still don't know what Luban was saying, and I mean, I wouldn't have chosen that one, but, you know, but the best shmooze written in was one time on a Wednesday, the Reshiva got up to the Bima to say the shmooze, and he had, I don't remember which sefer. I wasn't there, but the person's writing, he read the sefer, and he's, before he says, he's like penetrating, looking in, like 5 minutes, not mochach. Closed the sefer and walked off the Bima. Now, that was the best shmooze you ever heard. Because one of the purposes of the shmoozim is to, like, to say over a chazal and that has to be mochach. He didn't do it as a strategic move. I don't think he was doing it for that reason, but that's a pretty powerful way to teach a lesson that, wow, you know, it has to be mochach. It wasn't mochach, he walked off. So that's so hard to do. It's a great story, isn't it? Great story, the humility and the importance of having mochach. Rashiva could have said the shmooze. I'm sure he could have gotten it through. Come on. I'm sure he could have. I'm pretty sure the Rashiva, at a certain point in his life, could have said a shmooze on any chazal. Just read the chazal and say the shmooze. I don't know how you get the feeling. You know, but that's, you know, when you make a mistake and you say it, they say vulnerability breeds trust. When you show vulnerability, like you share something personal with someone, just generally, you should just know this, when you share something personal, it shows trust. Unless you meet the guy in the street for the first time, you start telling your personal life, then the guy's Lulu, and one of you belong in the psychiatric ward. But if someone starts telling you their personal life and they don't know you, then that's something wrong. But if you're taking people into your confidence, you know, it's usually that breeds, you know, like, wow, he shared that. And it's good to think of things that you could share. You don't want to share things that are inappropriate, but, you know, there are certain things that are meant to be private. But, you know, if there are things that you could share, it's good to come up with certain things, you know, like you share. Like, I share certain things. Like, I remember when I was in 10th grade, I was able to throw a ball from the right field corner to home plate. Strike. I could throw a fly. Strike. So everyone wanted them to, we called the Yankees to, they should come down to scout me, I remember, in Commonwealth. But they didn't because they said I was too young. My friends called. I was there. I wasn't going to call about myself. I said I'm too modest. That they called. And by the way, if I would pitch, I'd kill someone. I'd no aim. From the right field corner, I could throw a strike, but from the pitcher's mound, I had no control. So I don't know if it ended up. But sometimes I'll get it down the pike, and you couldn't hit it. But I might kill you. I might hit your head.
I thought
Ruby was pitching 90. Yeah, I had one great adventurous thing. They did a jugs thing, but.
Did
it in 90? One time when the jug said, are those things not reliable? I have no idea. Here's another thing, okay? I learned. Do something that's memorable to kids. Something that they're going to remember. Do something.
What was into the baseball? Was it, why
did
I bring the finger to?
Why did I tell that story?
Showing something.
Yeah, something personal. I tell a story like that. That's interesting. That's what I did. Is it very meaningful to me? No. Made a phone call to Yankee Stadium. Like, it was no big deal, but
I didn't respect you more.
I could throw a strike from right field to home plate. Okay. It was true, I could, but I remember when I was in Maganav once, so I think I was trying out, I wanted to try out for the All-Star team. So, you know, the camp had a, I was in the teenage camp. It wasn't called Hella yet, but it was called teenage camp, but they wanted to have a baseball team, so I wanted to try out. So the head counselor told me, I took my glove and I started going to center field. So he, you know, he liked me. He says, don't go to center field because the guy who was here, who's playing center field, was here the last 2 years and he's been playing center field. There's no way you're going to beat him out. Take a try a position where there's, you know, we don't have anyone who's been around for a couple of years. Say, that's okay. I'll do center field. I'll try center field. So a guy who I knew, he hit a line drive up the middle. So it probably bounced first time, like before second base, and was like a hot shot coming to center field. So I charged the ball, and the guy running to first never expects the outfielder to throw it to first base. But I had no busha. I just charged the ball like a maniac, and I fired as hard as I could to first base. I got him out at first base. Now, it's true, he wasn't really running. He was just like sort of jogging to first base. He was going around the base, and he wasn't even looking. So I threw him out at first base. And guess who got the center field job?
What happened to the other guy?
Who cares? I wasn't a great hitter, by the way. I wasn't a great hitter because in Borough Park, first of all, I never saw a blade of grass until I moved to Florida. So we had to play baseball in these alleys. So between my house and the next door house, we played in that alley. So we played with one of these blue balls. Punch ball. Oh, I know you know punch ball. Okay, very good. This punch ball, and we would pitch. So in order to hit the ball, if you hit the building on your right, the house on the right, the house on the left, it's foul ball. The only way you can get a double, triple, or home run is if you hit it straight away center field and you hit the building on the across the street. So I was able to do that, but I had to learn how to hit straight away. Everyone knows if you only hit the straight away center field. You know, usually the deepest part of the park. So I used to, if you want to know what's going to happen when I hit, I'm going to fly out the center field. That's what's going to happen. So I tell stories like that. You know, they just like to hear that. But as I say, find something private that's not inappropriate. You don't have to get too personal. It's not okay to say things personal that they're not supposed to hear. It doesn't make it better. It makes it like you should be the psycho ward.
There's not that much of a gray area.
These
between private and not inappropriate.
Saying about baseball when I was 14 years old, 15
so
years
that
old.
That private, that personal.
That's not so private. Like, no, but guys, that's talking about his dating.
But I'm saying, this you're talking about the baseball, that you have to wait, think of the whole night, should I tell them that or should I not? It's not that hard for you to say.
Yeah, but you have to think of things to say, like...
Why is that Bill Trust?
It's not embarrassing. It's not like I'm not going to use it against you.
No, that was just saying something personal.
So
saying personal. I'm telling you something about my personal life. It's a little bit... Yeah, there's low vulnerable and there's high vulnerability.
You said if someone talks about...
Vulnerability really is when you say you made a mistake one time. Yeah, I made a total mistake one time and, you know...
I even say always talking about dating is always a problem. Like, I've heard Ray Lubin tell dating stories.
Ray Lubin says over... selected things here and there. It's usually Ashkoff attached to it. He's a seasoned veteran. Rabbi Lubin, you know, Rabbi Lubin, it was in Eretz Yisrael, he gave 15 years of Vadim every Tuesday night. 15 years straight of Vadim. So he probably has prepared, okay, probably 40 Vadim times 15. He has like 600-700 Vadim. His life was already retold every minute of it. You know, so like, I can't go right to Lubin. I remember at Milwaukee, someone asked Rabbi Zakkai in Milwaukee, can we do Vadim? So Rabbi Zakkai said it's too hard because, and that Rabbi Lubin was still in Eretz Yisrael. Because Rabbi Lubin gives Vadim every week in Eretz Yisrael, so they're friends. So Rabbi Zakkai said, you can't compare Esther and Lubin. Lubin's a class on his own. There, Lubin has his whole life, you know, probably sectioned off in different, you know, binders. Lubin's one of a kind. I hope you realize, guys, you should realize that Lubin's one of a kind. He's a league by himself. He's a league by himself. Yeah, everything where Lubin says is, you know, really personal. He does say things personal, but and when he does, I could tell the guys, their eyes light up, and like they're hearing something. And it is, but she used to tell us stories. One time, it was Yom Kippur. I was davening yeshiva, and this is being recorded. Oh, you can leave it on. And I was bugging out. It was a long day. There's no breaks in Forest Hills. I think there were no breaks. So you started at 7 a.m. and you went till 8 p.m. and there was no break. No break. Rabbi Achberg, and I don't think it was his fault, but you know he didn't daven. He's the other people daven, but there were no breaks, and it was straight. And you know it is, you know, like. After a while, you get punchy. I was going crazy. So it was like Mila Min, I think it was by Mincha, Mila Mincha. I was bugging out. And I was still like 3 hours left of the fast. And I just walked out. And we were packed like sardines in the smaller Beis Medrash, like the auditorium. As opposed to the basement, we davened in the auditorium on Yom Kippur because there was Rabbi Ginsburg, Zechron Lebracha, had a shul in the yeshiva, and since those people paid money, the yeshiva felt it's proper their heretz to give them the bigger basement. So they had 15 balabatim in this big basement and 300 yeshiva guys in the small auditorium. So we davened, it was packed. So I just was in the hallway, and. As I was in the hallway, I guess I didn't see the reshiva. The reshiva came out of the men's room, and he saw me standing. I must have been obvious what I was doing there. I know it's not so hard to figure out when you go out during davening. You see 2 10th graders in the locker room. Like you don't have to think out why you're in the. You don't have to ask them why you're in the locker room. They're in the locker room because they can't handle, you know, the davening. So the reshiva started singing to me a niggun. On Yom Kippur, he started singing to me a niggun that they sang in Torah Vadas on the last day of school. The last day of school, like Yom Kippur, you're on vacation now for 2 hours. So he started singing a jingle. He was like all like cheery and so pumped. Like it's the end of the Zman, he's on vacation now. And he started singing the jingle. We used to sing, he told me, he said, they sing in Torah Vadas. We would sing when he was in Torah Vadas. You know, as a child, and they would sing this niggun, and it was so, you know, happy, and, you know, I said, wow, I started laughing, and then Rashiva went into the basement, and I went to the basement, Mincha was finished, like, I don't know, 15 minutes later, and the Rashiva gets up to speak, say the shmooz. So Rashiva was taking a break before the shmooz to use the restroom, and he comes in, and he started speaking. From the first second, he cried, for like 15 minutes. Rashid was crying and speaking 15 minutes. There's no way the Rashiva was thinking of that jingle when he was in that hallway. There's no way that that's what was on his mind, that's the end of his mind, Ben Hazman, when he was pouring his heart out. I felt so bad that I made the Rashiva have to be singing, it's vacation time, yippee. But he must have seen a guy bugging out on Yom Kippur, and he started singing me the end of the year, like, woo! You know? So, you know, you have to be able to relate. Okay, so do something memorable. Yeah, I thought of some things that you could do that are memorable. First of all, if you call a kid when he's sick, it's memorable. Believe it or not, it's not a big deal. But when you call kid, like, you know, how you doing? I heard you weren't feeling well. How's it going? And that is pretty. That's what told me he's just, you know, slightly ill. If it's something more serious, he had to go to the hospital or whatever. That's already sometimes could be, you know, grounds to for a visit. Wow, visit, that's like, you know, that's like something, you know. Kid has a birthday, to wish him happy birthday before all the kids are killing him, you know. Mm-hmm. But they wish him happy birthday. Sometimes it's a very big thing. Take a picture, kid doing something, and saying the picture. But, you know, just saying the picture, like, you send the picture to the kid's parents, but you don't then tell the kid that I took a picture, I sent it to your parents. It's worth so much more if you don't do that. You just send it to the parents and you wait. Eventually the parents will tell the kid that your Rebbe sent me a picture of you doing this and this. That is worth 1,000 times more than you telling the kid, oh, by the way, I saw you, I sent the picture to your parents. It's like, that almost becomes a little corny. You know, you just sort of like let it happen. You know, like, if you want to score by giving someone a compliment, so let's say, I'll give you an example. Let's say I want to give, let's pick someone over there, Mr. Aguinar, who's the English, math teacher. let's say I want to give Mr. Aguinar a compliment. So I can go to Mr. Aguinar and tell him that you're such a great teacher. But a much better thing would be if at a chinuch vad, I would just say that the yeshiva is so lucky that we had a teacher. We have a teacher like Mr. Aguinar. He's done so much for our school. It's like unbelievable. And then I stop. I don't say a word. Okay, now someone probably is going to go to Mr. Aguinar and say, by the way, I was at a session with Rabbi Palgan. He was telling us the school is so lucky, and I don't say anything. That compliment is worth 1,000 times more than the first one that I give to him. Give to him is one thing. So you have to, like, sometimes stage the way you're going to communicate. You know, the things that ripple. You tell the principal that this kid's doing so well. Okay, and the principal says, you know, I saw your Rebbe, he told me he's doing so well in class now, you know, it's really fantastic. That's worth much more, just to get the...
Rebbe, give the example, taking a picture. I don't want to get sidetracked. Is that okay? I know they talk a lot about creating boundaries with students. Taking a picture of a student is okay.
What do you mean?
The same with the concerns, you know, all these challenges, things, you know. It was the like, now don't take pictures. I just remember camp, looking off. I scarred for life from those sessions that they gave before camp. Like,
they
scared me to death.
Yeah, I mean, you're bringing out a good point. A person should double check with the principals, find out what the policies are. I think in our school, it'd be okay to take a picture of a kid studying or whatever. But yeah, in camp is a whole different setting. Camp is a different setting. The kids are dorming in camp. Just the hair what that is. You have 10-year-old dorming. It's like, would you ever have a 10-year-old dorming in yeshiva? Never. 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds dorming. They're children, little kids. You know, they're barely toilet trained. You know, like, you know, and their accidents. You know? Their accents is very, very, you know, like, anything private is like the scariest thing, you know. Camps are so scared of, you know, these things. You don't realize that the upper administration of camp has a great, great responsibility to make sure that the rules of propriety are meticulously followed. So, like, we just touched on that point, like, oh my gosh, anything can happen. I remember in Maganav there were rules on which staff members were allowed to go visit a bunk, and they can't even walk into a bunk. It's like off limits. And if you see someone going into a bunk, you have to report them. If you don't report them, then you're at fault. And, you know, they had to be very, very, very strict. There was once a Misa where, you know, whatever. This is like too scary to think about. You want to open up a camp? If you ever anyone think want to open up a camp, there's a lot to have to make sure that you're not even any part of camp. You know, the first thing you need to know is how to make sure it's a safe it's safe emotionally and physically and all that stuff. And the other thing I say is like to make appointments to speak to them in private. But when we say, obviously, Chanan makes a good point. When we say speak to them in private, we don't mean it in private. You know, there's, you know, but having a conversation that's just for them is really, really, I don't think kids have any private conversations with anyone who has a private conversation. And the conversation doesn't have to be on something very, very deep. You know, you just say, like, how are you doing? Like, what food do you like the best? I'd like to know my students. What food do you like the best? On the first day of the year, or the second day of the year, I did a survey for my shir. I think I did it this year. I'm pretty sure it was this year. Yeah, it was this year, Bensi. And I asked them what are their favorite drinks. And they, one guy wrote, you know, orange soda, this, that. They would just drink soda. And then I had one of my, you know, Monday night mishmaras. And I got different sodas, and I made sure to go shopping. I got an orange soda, and this guy did, you know, had a Snapple, and I said, and I didn't say anything. You know, I did the, you know, the high class way of doing it is like, I just put them on the table. You know, they're all going to take what they liked because I was getting their A1 drink, and. Like, I didn't try and gloat by saying, oh, but you know, it took me an hour, and I went to, like, 7 stores to get you your things. I just, like, you know, put it out there. You know, they see it. And it makes a very big makes a very rush. These are easy things to do.
Subtle hints?
No, it wasn't subtle. There was one Snapple there for the guy who said he likes Snapple. There was, I only had 8 kids in my share. An orange soda, a Snapple, whatever, you know, the one guy liked the Coconut Coke, I don't know.
Whatever. There we get a beer?
Huh?
There we get a beer for anything?
Not in public. So. I sharpened and sell Chametz Chumrah, but.
Huh?
I should bring it out. I'm just saying that these things are so memorable to them. Huh?
Someone wrote beer.
Brewed beer.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody, that's stupid. It's right beer. But there are some guys hold their liquor better. I mean, if a guy writes beer, it means that they're drinking. So now some fathers drink. There's one guy whose father drinks every Shabbos, and he gets more than beer. And he drinks, you know. He drinks every Shabbos. I'm pretty sure he gets shtickle drunk every Shabbos. Not drunk, but high every Shabbos. Well, I think it's a terrible thing because the door is very loose on these things. And the alcoholism does, not so hard to become an alcoholic. It just means that we view alcoholics like some kind of crazy, scary, what do you call that? If you can't stop. I tell you, when I was in Yeshiva Queens, so on Purim people gave me shalach manis, so I had like 10 beers on my dresser next to my bed, and I wasn't particularly a beer drinker at all, but I saw that was there. So after Marv, 10:40, Marv was at 10:30, Queens, so 10:45 I came up, 11 o'clock, and I was in my, you know, sat in my bed, it was really unknown, and I drank a beer. I had 10 of them, so it lasted like 2 weeks. But after I finished the last one, the next night, there was no beers. I was like, anybody have a beer? I said, oh my gosh, I'm addicted. That night, I felt I was addicted. I didn't have another beer. I said, wow. I momish became addicted. I had it for like 2 weeks straight. It was the best feeling. Okay, I can't say I loved the beer. I was drinking warm beer. It was really gross. Like, I didn't even know you had to be cold. I didn't know it was to be cold. I was so, like, nerdy on that. Like, but I'm pretty sure I became addicted. That afterwards, I stopped. But you can become addicted very fast. These kids, they get addicted really quick. Everyone can. You know, when you're a teenager, it's more easy to become addicted. That's why they say if you're going to drink, wait till you're 21, then you can drink all you want. It's like less nerve-wracking. But if you drink when you're younger, then you can't kick the habit. If you drink when you're older, you could just drink, you know, one time and then you don't. But I go to Sham Zachar's, I see the same people always there drinking. It's like, it's not a coincidence. It's like they're. So, but anyway, so memorable things. Think of memorable things. You can come up with your own ideas. They mamish make a roshan. You know, birthday. When I was the kid's birthday, I went. I don't think this, the yeshiva rules. I was not allowed to do this, but I did it anyway. Because it wasn't the yeshiva getting it. I got him a Carvel birthday cake, and then like 10 minutes later, Rabbi Dietsch walked in with a big cake from the mother. Sent a big birthday cake for the kid because it was his birthday, and like he like looked at that cake and said, "Yuck." Like, and that was like some kind of cream cake from the bakery, and I was like serving this ice cream cake, you know, like that. That's very meaningful. Yeah, and don't gloat when you do something nice to someone. You just like do it. It's like it means much more. When you just do it.
I heard that there's an Indian like if you bring it up, it like really increases the amount that they appreciate it. Like they look right for you, like instead of just.
Yeah, you know, kids are very funny in that certain ways. They don't necessarily appreciate what you're doing for them, but then when they think back, hopefully that they, you know, they will appreciate. Like I told one kid, I don't know if it was this year or last year. I said, after everything I did for you, you can't just do this. So the kid said, "What did you do for me?" He said, "Like, well, what did you do for me?" So I said, you know, I started listing like 15 things. This. Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, fine, so I'll do it. He couldn't think of it on his own. You're not doing it so the kids say thank you to you. You're doing it because, you know, that's a tremendous, you know, tremendous opportunity to give over to somebody else. How do you teach a kid to love something? You can't teach love. Teach Gemara and you hope that they're going to love it? I don't know, is that Mistabra?
Yeah.
The Gemara is so enjoyable that if you just teach them the Gemara, they're going to love it.
The only way to learn is to keep on learning, no?
No, I think there has to be some regilis. I think than that, you're right. But that you can teach over, you know, that may regilis help also. But also, if you teach it with a certain ava, then it's more likely they're going to receive it that way also. So there's just a few nuances. What we says chazer over, what do we speak about tonight? Number one, just understand that how Kodesh Baruch Hu views Makatov, someone who does something for his children, and treat kids how you would want to be treated. They don't want it to be easy necessarily. They just want it to be like they want to feel accomplished. I learned a very, very big must. The kids have to feel like they're accomplishing. If they don't feel they're accomplishing, they're probably not going to respect the class and not going to give for the class. They have to feel like that, you know. And also, they won't even want to show up to the class. They have to feel like they can't miss the class because they're not going to miss out. I think it's important to have the Bill of Rights. Tell them whatever you could tell them that is their rights, what I'm going to do for you. Take away a lot of the apprehension. Make a mistake, you should own up to it. And I think it breeds more trust when you make a mistake. We mentioned that thing of the Rashivas closed the book on the Shmooze. People said it was the most memorable Shmooze. And also to do things that are memorable. I did something this year I never did before. I heard a vort once that you can't know a kid until you see his house, how he's living. So you have to go visit every kid's house. See how they live in that house. At least one time. So I had to, I'm still doing that. I didn't finish everyone, but I go to every kid, I'm doing Mishmar, and we're, I have two left. One parent's just had a baby, so I can't go there yet. I have to wait till after Pesach, maybe things calm down. And one's in Orlando. So I can't go to Orlando right now. We're planning a trip there to Israel. So I got to I don't know. That's going to be a harder one. But
so what does Rebbe do to see that happen?
I have each guy do a mishma at every guy's house. And that's fantastic. It requires zero planning. Just tell them that they, you know, ask your parents if they could host us. What do they need to know? Nothing. We need a table. If they want to put out some water, they put out some water. They don't have to patchki up anything. And there are eight guys in my shir. There are 11 cars. they want to drive anywhere. They just want to drive. Sometimes they say, like, okay, guys, how do you want to divide up? Not everyone wants to drive. So everyone drives. They just want to drive. They don't care. So everyone's driving. So there's no problems. It's not, they don't care. It's their parents' money. They couldn't care less. So they just drive. They drive everywhere. So no getting somewhere, and they drive. Better. Oh, not yeshiva, good, I get to drive. So they drive there. We learn from 7:30 to 8:15, and they come back, and then they're very happy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I rotate. So we're, you know, and it's a big thing. Our parents see all the guys. Some of the parents haven't seen everyone in the class, even. So they sit up, and, you know, sometimes they have to clean up. I don't care. One guy left early in the afternoon because his parents were at work. And he had to clean up the house, so he went to the guy, gave permission, you know, go clean up, go good, go, yeah, he had to go to Pachka up and got nervous, everyone's going to his house. It's a very memorable thing that we went to his house to learn.
Okay. Did you actually learn those?
I make sure to learn, yeah. And here's something else I learned. They go, but they don't bring the Gemaras. I can get to a house, and they bring the Gemaras. No. What do you think you would do over here? Oh, yeah. So I bring Gemaras. I have a lot of Gemaras here. I have my Fast Gemara, my fourth day, every 7 years, every like 2 seconds I get another Gemara. I came in. I want them to see I schlep Gemaras because you have to have a Gemara. I know I can make a copy of the page and just 8 sheets, but it's not the same thing. They see I schlep the Gemaras, so you need a Gemara.
They start bringing their own
Gemara. They remember more to bring the Gemara because they remember me bringing the Gemara. It's true. It makes a roshim on them. I schlep the Gemara. So, you know, it makes a very big difference. So, and the parents thank me every time they see me. I think they come again. And it makes the kid feel like, wow, I came to his house. Little kid's house. That's a big, major thing. I think I'm so Moser Nefesh. Wow, what the? And that's not why I did it, but, you know, they think I'm going out of my way. I do out of my way every day. But that people don't think that's your job. But if you do something, even like 1 second outside of what they think your job is, like, wow, can't believe you did that. So, okay, any questions? That's the
Ruben's question.
Oh.
Rebbe didn't really answer it, did he?
You want to say his question again?
Which question about should you emphasize about stuff you do for kids so they can actually appreciate
it? I didn't hear about kids. I don't know where I heard it from. I heard from someone who said,
you know, it's okay to tell someone that you did something for them if they don't know. It's okay to tell them. I was just saying before, it's better if they find out without you telling them. That's what I was saying.
You have to make sure that they're going to find out, though.
Okay, you can make sure, but usually, you know, one of you guys go to Mr. Aguinar and tell him this great math teacher.
Are we supposed to lie?
Huh?
Are we supposed to lie?
No, you should not lie. If you don't think that, let someone who doesn't think it's a lie
tell.
So
did anyone hear that?
He's a good teacher.
So
are we ever supposed to like maybe lie to relate to a kid?
Lie to
like say like, oh yeah, when I was your age, I would never be able to do this. It's amazing what you're doing. Like, you know, like maybe the kid is the best kid.
I wouldn't lie to a kid. Usually, Gvarim Shablev, Mechnasim Alev, and they can tell. I wouldn't lie. If you don't feel that he's doing anything special, find something that you could say. So say, like, I know you probably don't want to do that. I probably try very hard for you to do that. So you get a big yesh koach. I see sometimes you don't want to do that, and today you did it, so you deserve a big yesh koach. That's real. That's true. As opposed to saying, I was the same way when I was your age. Not. They could tell somehow. They could tell when it's not real. It's like someone gives you a platitude. There's nothing more insulting than a platitude.
What's a platitude?
a platitude is a compliment that's not sincere. So no, it's not quite flattery. It would be something like, you know, I tell you're a bright guy just by your choice of frames in your glasses. You must be really fashionable. I don't know, it's like a platitude. It's like I'm trying to find something to, you know, bestow on you, but it's not really real. I don't even mean it. I'm just trying to find something. So, I don't know. It's good to be say things that are real. By the way, you could compliment a kid on a lot of things that are real. It's good to be able to practice sometimes. You know, you just take anything and find three things good to say about it. I had this, it wasn't my idea, but someone told me that every time you go into a classroom, because the teacher is always nervous when you go into a classroom, like, what's the principal thinking of me? So when you go into a classroom, so I would go into a classroom and I wouldn't leave until I could find three things that I could say good, and I send it. So I go into the classroom, I usually have some kind of device, so I send an email, and I write three good things. And I write, you know, whatever it was. When I finish, when I'm ready to leave, when I press send, and I walk out of the classroom, and now the teacher wants to know what I was thinking, and you got to find three things, but you can't do platitudes, you know. So I had to learn that also. You can't say things that are like, oh, I love the way the desks are so straight. That would be a platitude, you know. So you're just like trying to like drag it. Can't do that.
So what's an example of three stuff are we said?
Three things? Here. You want three things?
The three things of the in the classroom.
Yeah, lots of things you could say. It was so amazing how you answered that student. He was lost and you got him back on track. And you know, that was a very deep lesson. It wasn't lower order, it was very high. Deep, sophisticated material. You had great classroom management. I don't know. Your board use was fantastic. Much easier to.
And when does it start becoming platitude?
When it's insincere. If it's not sincere, you're just writing it just for the sake of writing three things. But you have to be able to find five things, and you only write three things. You know, but yeah, if you shouldn't lie. That was your good question. I don't think you should ever lie. Just for the sake of it. The kids could tell. Okay, guys.
Story is
end of this month, huh?
Memorable. It's a American story. I remember there was one time. It wasn't about me, it was about someone else. It was just like, so, this is the picture of Sharpen. There was one room.